Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Heidi Moore from The Guardian. I'm joined today by Joe Nocera of The New York Times and Diane Brady from Bloomberg Businessweek. It's been 7 years since the financial meltdown, and more than 10 million people are still out of work all over the country. It makes talking about job growth these days feel like filling out a tragic version of Mad Libs. The recovery is either anemic, sluggish, or my favorite, underpowered. So what can we do to get out of the rut? If President Obama or Congress have an answer, they sure aren't showing their cards. Joe, Diane, what are the innovative ideas? Are there any?
I think the innovative idea is something we've been hearing for quite some time, which is education and training. The question is just where, when, and how. So I think it's about the private sector stepping up. It's about some sense of, you know, wage growth. And I think at this point, it's really about getting those people back into the workforce in any capacity.
You know, if we had a fiscal policy that allowed for stimulus, where the government is pushing money into the economy, that's a way to find job growth. But we have a Congress and a president that are completely at loggerheads, and that's simply not going to happen. And so we're left with this situation where all we can do is hope and pray that the economy, you know, grows more or less by itself.
So what do you make, then, of the president's efforts to get the economy moving? He seems to be really treading water, if you listen to his critics, recycling old ideas. And there are questions about whether it's even the president's responsibility to take care of this. What do you think?
I don't think the government creates jobs, ultimately. I think companies in the private sector have to create jobs. And if anything, you probably have to give the private sector more latitude to get involved in education and training. They're quite willing to go in and tell us what skills they need. It's just, are we willing to essentially give them the latitude to do that?
You know, what the president has proposed this week is something he's proposed a lot, and it's kind of a running theme of his, which is that you know, if you combine training in a community college setting and link that to a specific company or a specific kind of job, that people can find jobs. Fundamentally, he's right. But it can't be driven by the president or the government. It really has to be driven by corporations. And this actually is happening more and more, where companies locate to put a plant in a certain place, and as part of the deal, they strike a deal with the community college. So it's not like it isn't happening, but it's happening in dribs and drabs.
So the thing that economists worry about is that this is a structural unemployment problem, where we just don't have the skills anymore for the jobs that are out there. And I'm wondering, do you think this is a permanently new world that we're in? I mean, we've had fairly flat job growth for a while. There are millions of long-term unemployed, people who aren't even counted anymore as part of the unemployment statistics. Is this just what we have to get used to?
There are clearly structural issues, and we've been talking for some time about the quality of jobs coming back. I mean, folding sweaters in a store is not quite the same as being a, you know, nuclear physicist or engineer. But I think those people do get incorporated back into the workforce. The reality is wage growth is probably a problem because we're in a global economy, and the U.S. is one of the highest cost labor markets in the world.
This is, I think, particularly true of people who've been laid off in their 40s and 50s. And those people have an extremely difficult time trying to find a job in the same sector, much less at the same pay rate. And in that sense, you know, I do think we are in a different, tougher world where good jobs are going to be harder to come by.
You know, it's interesting with Foxconn, which got all the attention in China for labor conditions. If you look at where they're investing their money now, they're actually investing more in robotics and equipment to replace people in China because they don't want the hassle or the headache of labor. So this is a global phenomena, but especially in the U.S., look at the hot sectors. They're not sectors that create a lot of jobs.
Well, on that grim note, let's pivot in honor of the president's favorite word and talk about job creators, the people who don't have to worry about being replaced by robots, the titans of industry that were supposed to save the economy. Well, few of those jobs have materialized, but it hasn't prevented the chief executives from making more and more money. I'm recalling a Yahoo executive this week who made $58 million severance payment for 15 months of work. So how is it that CEO pay just keeps going up? The economy isn't thriving. Where's the money coming from?
You know, I recall talking to one CEO once when he took home $80 million 1 year, and he said, you know, I'm in the middle of my peer group.
So
I think your peer group becomes a very narrow category when you're talking about CEOs. And so it's those stock options. The same with that beautiful severance package. Timing is everything.
Right. The economy may be sluggish, but the market hasn't been sluggish at all. And most of these CEOs get... They now get large blocks of restricted stock as well as stock options, and that is the bulk. That really is the bulk of their pay. There's a lot more disclosure than there used to be. The SEC makes it much easier to see what a CEO's pay package, what the top executive pay packages are. And it was thought at the time, this is sort of the middle of the 2000s, that disclosure would maybe embarrass them a little and cause pay to be depressed a little. It actually had the exact opposite effect, because now that CEOs can see what each other's pay is like, they more and more want to say, well, if he's getting X, I certainly should be getting X plus Y.
Well, it's interesting that you bring this up, because the SEC is actually looking at a rule to disclose the proportion of CEO pay to average worker pay. They're hoping to name and shame, but if I'm hearing you correctly, it's not going to work.
I don't think it does, because when you look at the explanations, it's all about what I've done for the company, and it's a myth of genius. They look at the stock price when it's going up, attribute it to their own sort of, you know, brilliance, but then when the stock price is going down, it's market conditions, so it's a win-win either way.
Finally, let's look ahead to next week and the stories we're watching. With me again are Joe Nocera of the New York Times and Diane Brady from Bloomberg Businessweek. Joe, what are you looking at?
Well, I'm watching New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, who has launched a classic New York Attorney General style investigation into high-frequency trading. If you'll recall, it was a decade or so ago when one of his predecessors, Elliot Spitzer, more or less brought down Wall Street and actually changed the world of analysts for a while. Now we're going to see if Schneiderman can do the same thing with high-frequency trading.
And Diane, what stories are you watching?
Well, I'm heading into the Milken Institute, and one issue that's come up a lot is women on boards, which I know is a hard rallying cry because it's women essentially making, I think, $250,000 a year for 8 meetings. But very important issue, a lot of initiatives coming down. I think we'll see some real change this year.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org/business. You can also take this program with you as a podcast on iTunes. Joe, Diane, thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Heidi Moore, and this is Money Talking from WNYC.